Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to Completely Arbitrary, the podcast about trees and a few other things.
Etc.
My name is Alex Kross, and I'm one of your hosts.
And my name is Casey Clapp. I'm also a host.
Hi, Casey Clapp.
Alex Croson, AC.
You old son of a bitch.
Come on. That's just not true.
We're supposed to say, you old son of a gun.
You old son of a gun. I know. I want to know where they came up with the gun part of it.
That's a good question for our listeners.
Thank you for answering that, everyone.
Yeah, somebody will write in and say, the son of a gun comes from the 1923 novel Gunsonners.
The son of the gun.
Yeah.
One day we'll read that novel.
Yeah, it sounds like a good book.
It's a beautiful spring day, Alex. I don't know if you knew this.
Sorry, I just coughed right into the microphone.
We should just... We shut this whole thing down.
It's okay. It adds a little humanity, I think.
Yeah. Honestly, I thought you were a robot this whole time.
Well, I don't know how you would think that. I'm far too emotional to be a robot.
Yeah, it's the robot's dilemma, as the Shins say.
I'm just a highly evolved robot.
Yeah.
Sophisticated technology.
Yeah, you have compassion.
I do.
You're like one of those robots in... the Terminator Part 1.
Oh, the Terminator has compassion.
Doesn't he? He
comes I started that sentence as a question and I ended it as a statement.
I thought the opposite way around. I'm trying to think. Maybe it's like iRobot or something.
I mean, he tries to save the kid, right? He gives a thumbs up. I think that's Terminator 2 Judgment Day.
Yeah, he gives that thumbs up. That's how you know that it's like, wow, he cares.
He's a real cool dude.
Yeah, that's true. Now, R2-D2, now there's a robot with compassion.
Yeah, when he goes, meep, meep. Mm-hmm. Yeah. He does a little sad sound.
Yeah, he does, yeah.
Which... I don't know. There's probably some dumb Star Wars lore that explains why he has a personality.
Probably.
I think it's because Luke removed that little gummy chip from
his
side.
Oh, yeah. The
restrictor.
Yes, restrictor bolt or something like that.
Yeah, something like that.
Yep. Oh, man. I'm ashamed that I can't remember. Oh, God.
It's okay.
It's like my favorite sci-fi,
yeah.
At least historically.
It's really good historic sci-fi.
Man, I had an argument with somebody about what the coolest and best spaceship was.
Wow.
What would you say?
Oh, God. Well, I want to say Millennium Falcon. That's just a classic.
Yeah, that was what I said. It's like number one.
Are we talking across all sci-fi universes?
Yes.
Wow.
Well, but the ones that more specifically take place in space...
Sure.
That universe.
I mean, as a kid, I loved Boba Fett's ship, Slave One.
Oh, that was pretty cool. Yeah,
so awesome.
Because
it lands on its butt
yeah.
And it takes off and he's upright. And I as a child, I was like, I drew pictures of it and I drew what I thought the inside looked like.
Yeah.
My mom got me a book.
The DK books.
Yes. That had all the interiors of the ships, like cross sections.
Oh man. I still have those.
I still had those and I gave them to my niece because she was getting interested in Star Wars.
Yep. Good.
And she loved them too. They're magical.
They're the best.
Yeah.
Yeah. It took me a long time to read the word reinforcement. They're reinforced. I didn't know how to pronounce it.
I see.
So I called it, I don't remember. My brain just skipped over it.
Ran for Ked.
Yeah. Yeah.
It is a beautiful spring day, Casey. I woke up this morning and decided to spend all day out of the house.
Good choice.
Something I rarely do. And I went and got a bagel and some coffee.
That sounds really nice.
You want to hear my obnoxious order?
Yes. Wait, for your bagel or your coffee?
Both.
Oh, God. I
got a...
I'm a black coffee kind of guy.
I got an everything... Well, then you're going to scoff and roll your eyes at me here.
Okay.
I got an everything lightly toasted with scallion schmear.
Scallion. Oh.
And then for my coffee, I walked over to Cece and I got a iced oat milk latte.
Okay, that's not so bad.
It was delightful.
I was expecting like no fat.
Oh, no, I don't do any of that stuff.
And all this other stuff with like a one half squirt of vanilla, a full squirt of sugar of some other kind.
No.
And then if you get it even slightly wrong, I'm going to be upset.
I have no problem with people who have elaborate drink orders, but I'm not that fussy with my coffee.
All right.
I'll take whatever. I drink at home. I drink like Kroger brand.
Oh my God.
In the can.
You got to stop telling me this. Oh gosh. I specifically, when I go backpacking, like most people, like you got to, you know, breathe ultra light or like, you know, minimize weight. I bring a metal, like Japanese built hand grinder.
Oh wow.
With whole bean coffee that I get at some local roaster, and I don't grind it beforehand. Like you go up there,
you grind to order.
Yeah, it's like steel, so it's not even like a light grinder. It's a full grinder.
It's not carbon steel. It's no. Just steel.
No, we're on opposite sides of the spectrum is what I'm telling you right now.
I can appreciate a good coffee. Whenever I have a good coffee, I'm like, oh, this is a good coffee.
Yeah.
I just did this, what do you call this hand gesture?
You told me what that's called, the chef's kiss.
Oh, yes. I'm doing a kind of a wagging a chef's kiss.
Yes,
like a little bit of paisan.
Like,
you know?
You're savoring something.
Yes.
Yeah.
I can really appreciate good coffee, and I think I can taste it when it's good,
you know,
but also I don't give a shit about good coffee when I'm making stuff. I mean, I dump a bunch of grounds from a can into my coffee mate and I hit go.
I just
chug it.
Wow. I accept you for who you are.
Thank you.
However,
I would
never accept your coffee for what it is.
Well, you and your coffee can go fly a kite.
Well, we will. And you know what? It's going to be really nice.
It's such a beautiful day.
Yeah, it's such a beautiful day. Go take your coffee to the park and I hope you have a great time.
Yeah, I was being genuine. Go fly
a
kite. It's
fun. Thank you. I appreciate that good pivot.
Not.
Wow. Well, it sounds like you had a great day with your coffee and your bagel.
I did. And then I went to, just to finish up the day, I went and hung out with my friend Ty at Cloud Cap Games in Selwood. He owns this game store.
That's right. Yeah.
Board and card games. It's a delightful store. We just chatted and had a good old time.
Well, that's really good. I hope everyone goes to this game store and chats with Ty.
Yeah, I hope so. It's Cloud Cap Games in Selwood, Oregon. Mm-hmm. Ty, he and his wife, Jess, two of my favorite people.
Such a delight.
Very delightful people. Casey.
Alex.
Speaking of delights, we have a delightful treat to talk about today.
That's right. Shop local.
Do you think this was my best transition yet?
Singly.
Until I pointed it out?
Without question. I think even after pointing it out, still.
Wow. Thanks, Casey.
Yeah. Now people also who would have been aware because it was so smooth, now they're like, there was a transition there. That's what I think.
It's like at the end of the Sixth Sense when they're like, he is a goat. And then you go back and you watch all, it's like all the red stuff.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I haven't watched that movie. It scared me. I still have not seen it.
Oh, yeah? Ever?
I'm an adult, and I still have yet to see it because I have this deep-seated thing. It took me years to watch Jurassic Park again.
Jurassic Park?
Swear to God, that movie completely destroyed me as a child.
That's
I couldn't
incredible.
Flush the toilet. I had to jump under my pillows or my bed,
toilet,
my sheets.
The toilet thing is curious to me.
It was
because
loud.
Of the lawyer that... Oh, because it's loud.
Yeah, it was just loud. It's like you flushed it and I couldn't hear what was going on. And I was worried that there would be certainly a velociraptor outside the door.
Wow.
Yeah.
I feel like I had that same, like the flushing, the scared of flushing. Like I would flush it and then like run out the bathroom.
Yeah, jump under the covers and then I was safe.
Yeah.
Yeah, to this day, I still like cover my toes. Anyway.
You got
to
do the rap.
Yeah. What were you talking about earlier? I can't even remember.
Well, I was talking about this week's Tree of the Week.
That's right.
The fantastic bubblegum... Umbrella thorn.
You did it. The umbrella thorn.
The umbrella thorn.
Unrelated to the hawthorn.
Oh, but another thorny tree.
A very thorny tree.
So, Casey, this week we are... How do we want to travel from Ireland to Africa?
I say we go by dirigible.
We hop into a dirigible. And what is a dirigible now?
A dirigible, Alex.
What's a dirigible?
It's an airboat, air machine. Right.
Like a Led Zeppelin.
Yes. Well, it's very similar to that.
Like a steampunk sort of thing.
Exactly. Yeah.
And we have mechanical monocles.
Yeah. Well, obviously, I mean, you got to see you got to be able to look really far. Actually, my mind zooms out so I can see the ground, identify the trees from our lofty expanse.
And my zooms in so I can see the detail. And that's sort of why we make a good pair.
That's exactly right.
Well, we hop on over to, we float on over a very slow journey. I think it probably takes us about 6 months.
It only took some people like 27 days to get around the Earth, didn't it? Was it around the world in 27 days or something?
Yeah, that's a book.
Yeah, they did it in a blimp.
That's right.
Not a blimp. That wasn't a blimp. That was a...
I think it was a dirigible. Dirigible.
Dirigible. I like how you say things.
And we land in what? The savannah?
Yes. The African savannah. The Sahel, if you will.
And I go, holy shit, it's hot.
Mm-hmm.
And also, what's that tree? And Casey, what happened?
Nothing. I was going to take a drink of this kombucha and I decided not to. So I put it back.
Kind of puzzled look on your face.
Because I was like, why am I doing this?
Sorry to call you out.
That's okay. You just have to, everyone will have to forgive us.
All right, let's focus. We see an umbrella thorn.
That's right.
What are we seeing? What does it look like? What does it smell like? What does it feel like? Describe for us the experience.
All right. So again, I am not as worldly as I wish I were, but unfortunately, the internet exists and I love this tree. I'm familiar with some of their kinds of trees and this is what used to be an acacia.
Oh.
Are you familiar with that?
Well, acacias, no.
Well, I will tell you, Alex.
Why did I almost I was familiar? I think I'm mixing up with Araucarias.
Oh, sure. Yeah, this is completely different.
I've heard of acacia.
Yeah. All right. We are landing our dirigible in a very wide expanse. All of the savannah animals run away because they're like, there's a dirigible. I got to get out of here.
Yeah.
And they put on their monocles and they run away.
Okay.
We land. We get on the ground. It's a kind of an arid landscape. There's not a whole lot of lushness to it. It's kind of, you know, the classic. There's a herd of lions over there, you know? Have you ever seen The Lion King?
I have seen The Lion King.
It is a tree that you would see them hanging out underneath, you know.
For sure.
When they're bouncing through all the animals and they're all standing up and they're singing like one of their happy songs,
yes.
Nala and Simba.
I will say as someone who grew up in the United States, almost every piece of media that depicts Africa includes a depiction of the umbrella thorn.
I think so, yeah.
It's like the outline of it is pretty iconically.
It totally is.
African Sahara.
And
Sahara? Savannah?
Yeah, Savannah, Sahara. Well, not quite the Sahara. That's a desert. It has different kinds of trees.
Okay.
Or no trees. But it is. But honestly, it's actually for good reason in this case because this tree is super, super common down there. There's a couple different species that are super closely related to it. And this one used to be acacia, as I said, but no longer is. It's now Vachellia tortilis.
Vachellia tortilis.
Vachellia tortilis. It sounds like a kind of pasta, doesn't
it? It's absolutely something you would order at a pasta restaurant.
Oh, yeah, totally. And it would just poke your mouth a lot.
And they would say, what? Say Vachellia tortilis?
Well, anyway, it is an iconic tree of Africa. And here is why. It grows just south. So if you're looking at Africa, the very top is the Sahara. Like, mm-hmm. So the very, very, very top is like just North Africa. It's got kind of a different thing. But in big, broad strokes, you have the Sahara Desert on the very top.
Yeah.
And then as that transitions down, as it goes south, all of a sudden you start to get into a little bit more arid landscape, but it's more of a Great Plains. That's the classic savanna.
Okay.
In like the sub-Saharan area.
Okay. So it's like... It's like a midway point between the desert and the jungle.
Yes, exactly. Okay. And it's like a very long form transition between the two.
Cool.
So there's wet and dry seasons, and there are lots of different grasses and very few trees that are spread out pretty intensely.
Mm-hmm.
I would say it's very similar to something like the American Southern Midwest, like in Texas and some parts of Arizona, New Mexico.
Cool. It's about that latitude, right?
No, actually, I looked at that. It's actually like a full like section of latitude below or two. So it's
okay.
It's close, but not close enough to be like, yeah, that's you know the reason why.
I gotcha.
However, it is it's a little less rocky. But of course, it's a huge landscape. It goes from the entire, this is area is called the Sahel, S-A-H-E-L, I believe.
Sahel.
And what is curious about it is that it also kind of goes and grows on the eastern coast all the way down into South Africa. So it kind of skips around the sort of big central, like the Congo, like extra intense tropical forest. Kind of skips around it on the coast on the east side and then comes back down into South Africa.
Interesting.
Instead of the lower section of the continent. So, unless it's like the tropical sections or the absolute desert section of Africa, it is kind of an iconic tree for almost everywhere else.
Mm.
So, it kind of makes sense that you would see it. Unfortunately, it also is, I think, like people just don't know much about Africa. So, they're like, well, we don't know what else. Let's just put that one on there.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of, it's which happens all the time. It's like, well, there's a lot more than that, but okay, cool.
Yeah. African portrayal in Western media is just a monolith.
Oh, it's awful. Yeah. And I know
I think monolith is the wrong term, but I hope you understand what I'm saying, everybody.
I think so.
It's like we have like three things that are like, quote, African.
Yeah, it's pretty disgraceful. Yeah. It's like I think we do the same in Western media with like South America and things like, oh, I would say, yeah, Central South America.
Every culture in the world, we do that with every culture in the world. We kind of whittle it down to like one or two things.
That's so true.
That you can point at and say, that is so Chinese.
Yeah, or, it's like, oh, well,
yeah,
that may be this very specific section. Yeah, right. It's just like saying all, you know, any place of a certain vastness is the same. It's like, well, that's just impossible. For it just sure. can't be true. Same thing with any forest, even, you know, it's obvious, I think in trees, of course.
Of course.
And so if you're looking down through Africa, just like you were saying, there's the like the Sahara, and there's a specific tree. I can't remember the name of it. We'll find it. And that tree grows in the Sahara Desert, and it like sends these gigantic roots straight down to like the lowest, deepest water.
Hmm.
And it's just like this one singular tree that every now and then grows out there. Then there are the oases that have like palms and have human inhabitants for thousands upon thousands of years. And those have like completely changed like an entire section. Like in lore of Arabia, there are like these huge oases that had like date palms and people that lived there, and they grew all these different things.
Yeah.
So you think of like the palm trees and this kind of weird sub-semi-tropical. And then you also have like South American plants and like gigantic mountains that are like subtropical, but at the same time, high elevation, so they're really cold. All the way down to this intense jungle. You know, the Congo River is so deep in certain places that they don't even know what's down there.
Really?
Yeah. And it's also rushing so fast, like through certain gorges.
Yeah.
And it's like 80 or 100 feet deep. They're like, we don't know. And we can't go down to look because it's too intense of like a torrent. It's like the Mississippi River flowing through something like the Grand Canyon.
Okay. We got to get James Cameron on the case.
Yeah, we do. Yeah. He can get a boat down there. Yeah, a little submarine. Yeah. I read an article about it. They found like this fish or something. It's like a blind fish that lives in these incredibly deep areas in the Congo River in like this crazy gorge that has like no eyes.
That's cool.
Because it's so deep and the water is so kind of muddy because it has so much like sediment in it.
Yeah.
You just can't see anything.
And it's going like 100 miles an hour.
Yeah, it's insane. So you have that. You have like these crazy tropical forests where you have literally gorillas living there.
Yeah.
And then you keep going south again. You get these really dry savannas with these trees. And then you have baobab. I could go on.
Summation, Africa is an incredibly diverse place.
It is a place that's on my list to go. I just want to like travel through it north to south and just see how it changes.
That'd be sick.
Anyway, we're talking about one specific tree. It is the umbrella thorn,
yes.
Vercellia tortalis.
Vercellia tortalis.
They call it that.
I love saying that.
Yeah, Vercelli, it's named after this dude. He was another botanist, plant collector, working for the East India Company, I think.
Okay.
Over in China, he was collecting plants.
Cool.
So they named it after him, and it's in fact super closely related to a bunch of other things in the pea family.
Pea?
Yes. Did you know that the pea family is the third largest family of plants, or of trees more specifically, I guess
really?
I should say?
Really?
Yeah, isn't that wild?
Casey, that's a fantastic fun fact.
I'm just absolutely stunned by that.
We gotta have a dumb pun. Maybe somebody can come up with one.
Please help us.
We're not doing it.
We came up with one dumb pun.
For like a tree fun fact, like a little, and we could play a little sting that goes, ba-da-down, fun fact.
Fun fact. We need like a stamp.
Yes.
Yeah. We're going to be like a Nickelodeon show waiting to happen.
I think we are on our way.
Yes.
I could see us animated.
And yeah. Getting slimed.
Yes. Oh, God, how I'd love to be slimed.
You know, I got slimed once.
As a child?
Yeah.
At the Nickelodeon studios?
Yeah.
Nickelodeon. Nickelodeon studios?
Oh, good.
Well, Casey,
accent.
Let's talk morphology of the yes. Acacia Vicelli Tortali Auto.
You got it. All right. So it's in the Fabaceae, which is the most fabulous of all the families.
Wow.
Obviously. It's the pea family. It has a bunch of different trees in it, and a lot of them, especially down in these sorts of areas, the mesquite is in this family.
Really?
The locust trees, the albizia. In fact, I compiled a list, and I really would love it if you could try to sound out many of these different things. All right, so just quickly go to the notes that we have taken for this.
I got them right here.
Now go to the very bottom of that page.
Somebody's prepared.
Someone, and read there's a thing that says, Alex, try to pronounce these tree genre in the pea family.
You idiot. Why did you type that?
I didn't. You, everyone in there, I didn't do that.
Acacia.
Acacia.
Acacia. Albizia. 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 Albizia.
You're doing so good.
Is that right?
Albizia, yeah.
I'm getting no confirmation, Casey.
It's because I just want you to keep going. I just want you to rapid fire.
Bauhinia, Bolusanthus, Berkia, Calpurnia, Coloformis superium.
you just added in an entire other like syllable.
Cordilla. Cordilla. There's only one L.
Yep.
Cyclopedia. Dicrystaxis.
I'm going to post these so everyone can see what Alex is reading.
Erythrina. Erythropnelium, Feldrerbia, Indigofera.
I like Indigofera.
Yeah, Indigofera. Indigofera.
Yeah, I can Indigo for that.
Yeah, see, that's the best for like for using it as a pun. Indigofera.
Yeah.
Fera.
Yeah.
Mandulia.
Mandulia.
Peltroforum.
Peltroforum.
Philoptera. I'm so tired.
Yeah, I only got three more.
Paleostigma.
Yeah, that's a good one. Yeah.
Well, I recognize stigma.
Shlodia.
Shotia.
Using Shotia. Maybe it's like Shoshia.
And Xanthocharyx.
Like Nova Scotia. It's just Shosha.
Oh, Shosha?
I'm making it up. I'm not sure either.
I love Shosha. Let's do Shosha. And. Yeah. What am I reading right now? What
Xanthocercis.
What is this whole list? What am I doing?
These are a bunch of trees that grow down in Africa, and these are their different genres.
In the pea family.
These are all pea family trees.
Oh, and acacia is the Vaucelleria.
Yes, there's also other acacias. Like there is acacia something. You're sweating. Are you okay?
I don't feel so good.
I'm not the good game person here, so I was reading through these, and I was like, I can barely pronounce half these. I want Alex to try.
Yeah, everybody loves to laugh at the sad clown.
You did great.
Thanks.
Well, those are all the fun genre genus names for a bunch of things in the pea family.
I do want to get into the morphology of the
I'm about to. We just had to take a quick right turn.
Yeah,
down.
It
Alex,
was so
speak
fun.
Latin real fast. Okay,
at the time of my life.
All focus. All right. So the thing that has to do with pea family is they always have a pea pod.
Wow.
Classic pea pod.
That's awesome.
Including like peanuts. Those are in the pea pod or those in the pea family.
Mm-hmm.
Clover. It's in the pea family. Clover.
Wow.
Like you go out in the lawn. There's clovers. And
clovers
bees.
Have little pea pods?
100%.
Well, really?
They would if you let them grow into doing that.
Oh, okay.
But it's not quite the pea pod that you would expect.
Sure. It never is.
Yeah. It always, they're just basically to have a pea pod. It has a long dehiscent fruit, which means it just dries up. Sometimes they don't always dry up.
Dehiscent,
yes.
Meaning that it falls apart.
Yes, when you're talking about cone morphology, exactly.
Oh.
But in this, dehiscent means more just it's dry versus dry, and it'll kind of pop apart.
Oh, great.
So some of them would pop apart, some of them don't pop apart in different genre, different areas within the Fabaceae.
Is vanilla in the pea family?
I don't believe so, but I'm not sure. I'd have to look it up.
Sorry, go ahead.
Otherwise, basically, you have to have two suture lines is what it's called. So if you ever see like a big, long pea pod of some kind, and you can usually split it, right?
Uh-huh.
Down
the,
and
yeah,
you
yeah,
have
yeah,
two
yeah.
different equal sides.
Right.
That's the thing for pea family. They have two suture lines, one on one side.
Okay.
And then They have those bean, little bean things in mm-hmm. there. And they also have usually flowers that have two petals to the side, and then I think one petal up and two petals down or something. I think there's five.
Oh, five petals.
Yeah. And so if you ever see a pea, just the standard pea growing in a garden, and yeah. you look at that flower, the pea family flowers always have like those, that kind of shape where they have two or so petals that come down and have this big scoop at the bottom.
A kind star of shape, right?
Yeah, pretty much.
Okay.
And so they will, that's how, you know, you set it apart. You have that kind of flower, and then you have these pea pod like fruit. They are wild all over the tropics. There's just pea family stuff all over the place.
Interesting.
And so they have these cool pods. Now, this one, our umbrella thorn, you can tell them apart because instead of having these long pods that hang down, you have these little tiny pods that are literally scrunched up, like tiny little like springs that are just loaded. They just go, whoop. That's what the tortoise means because they're torted and curled up.
I imagine almost like accordion bellows.
Yeah.
I'm going to Google it.
Yeah, give it a quick Google. It's more like a cinnamon roll.
Wow, I'm so excited to see it.
Spiraled and smashed together.
Okay, I looked up umbrella thorn pea.
Yes. Look up maybe the pod.
Okay.
Rather than the pea pod.
Hold on.
You'll find it.
This is scintillating radio.
Yeah.
Wow, I see it.
Yeah.
Okay. They look like, they look like those gummy peach rings.
Yeah. Okay. Yes. No, totally do. That's exactly it.
Yep.
So they grow, and that's a really telltale way to identify them if you're ever down in Africa, because there's a couple different kinds of species that look really similar.
Of the acacias?
Yeah, exactly. Okay. And the other thing about these, which I thought was really fascinating, is that just like most things that grow down in this kind of area, even in acacias and mesquites that grow down in Arizona, New Mexico, sort of the North American desert area, same thing with the species that grow down in South Africa. Because they kind of had the same things going on, where millions of years ago there were animals that would browse on them, so they developed thorns, and that's why a lot of times, like esquites and acacias and umbrella thorn, like it used to be acacia, so I keep on referring to it as an acacia.
I see.
They developed thorns.
I really love using the word browse for eating here and there.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And I like the idea of. And looking in the fridge at 11 p.m. I'm just browsing.
I'm just browsing. Yeah, don't worry about it.
Casey!
Just eating a couple little bits of this.
Piece of mortadella.
Yeah.
A little bit of cheese.
Yeah, did you just exclaimed my name?
Yes, and it is because we need to take...
We're not even done. We got to wait.
No, we can't. We got to take a break.
Ah, all right. Sounds
good. We'll be right back with more Completely Arbitrary. Casey!
Hi, Alex.
You know something about me?
I do.
And you do know this, that I love to be cozy.
Yes, that is very true. Unfortunately, I have to get you out of your bed to do work, because our studio here is small.
Yeah, Casey physically drags me out of bed every morning. And you know what?
Slap a pair of headphones on.
And you know what I'm sleeping on, Casey?
What are you sleeping on today, Alex?
My brand new Cozy Earth bedding.
Oh, Alex, I heard about this.
And you know what I'm sleeping in?
What?
My brand new Cozy Earth jogger set.
Ooh, hold on. Let me get a feel of that. Not your sheet. I'm getting my own sheet.
That's right.
Ooh, this is smooth.
Casey is wrapped in his new Cozy Earth bedding. Now, Casey just returned from Italy.
Just got back.
Land of soft fabrics.
Exactly.
And he has waiting for him products from our brand new sponsor, Cozy Earth. Casey, what do you think?
This is incredible. I don't think I've ever felt something so soft and so, like, I don't know. It feels silky and smooth, and it looks beautiful.
It's true, Casey. And you know what? I have been sleeping in my Cozy Earth clothing.
Well, Alex, have you noticed anything about your sleep?
I have been sleeping so well. And here are some things I love about sleeping in my Cozy Earth bedding and my Cozy Earth clothes.
Yeah.
This is no longer officially an ad. This is just me talking.
Hey, let everyone just come on in. Just come on in here.
Casey, it is temperature regulating, so I no longer have any problems with getting too warm, getting too cool, having to get up and shut the window, having to get up and open the window, turn the heat on, turn the heat off. I sleep through the night. Soon I'll be eating solid foods, and I have such a good time doing it. Casey, I know you've been traveling, you've been flying, you've been not sleeping in your own bed. I cannot tell you how excited I am for you to try this brand new Cozy Earth bedding.
I cannot tell you how much I agree. Just feeling it, I'm essentially swaddled in a sheet right now, Alex.
Yes, right,
and
you are.
I cannot tell you how excited. I'm going to wash this. I'm going to throw it on my bed today.
Hell yeah.
So if you want to be as cozy as Alex and I, then go to CozyEarth.com and after you purchase, enter the promo code TREES, T-R-E-E-S, to get 35% off. That's huge.
And Casey, how about this? All of Cozy Earth's products come with a 100-night sleep trial and a 10-year warranty. I don't have that kind of warranty on my tires.
I don't have that kind of warranty on anything.
So go to CozyEarth.com and use promo code TREES for 35% off. Now go and get cozy.
Yeah, you go get cozy now.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. Hi, everybody. It's Alex here. And you know what? Come springtime, those trees are a-blooming. Those people are a-walking around. That sun is a-shining. And it makes me so grateful for my social life. People are wanting to do things again. And it can be extremely rewarding to start to see friends more often and, you know, go on cute friend dates or romantical dates, sit on a patio and drink a coffee. Ooh la la. But it's really easy to overdo it. And for me, it's very important to keep an eye on my social battery. Every time I go on a social outing, I come home and I'm like, wow, I am really tired in a very specific way. Well, that's my battery. That's my social battery being drained. And I didn't really have this language until I started going to therapy. I didn't know why being around people made me so exhausted, even though I love those people and enjoy being around them. But therapy helped me with my self-awareness and helped me unlock some language that I didn't otherwise have. And if you are struggling with feelings and thoughts that you don't understand, therapy can be a great way to unlock the power of understanding. And a great way to start is BetterHelp. It's completely online and it's designed to be super convenient and flexible, which is very important. How many times have you had a therapy session on the calendar and that time rolls around and you think, I gotta drive all the way across town. I am not gonna go. It has, of course, happened to me. I'm sure it's happened to everybody who's been in therapy. No worries with BetterHelp. It's all online. And all you have to do is fill out a brief questionnaire. You get matched with a licensed therapist, of course. And nobody nails it on their first time. It's like going on dates. You gotta find the right therapist for you. It's silly to think that the very first date you ever go on is going to be your future spouse. So you can switch therapists at any time, no additional charge. It's extremely easy. So find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/trees today to get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/trees. Happy spring! Welcome back to Completely Arbitrary, the podcast about trees and other related topics. My name is Alex Croson.
Hi, good morning. This is Casey Clapp, also.
We've just come back from a bit of a break, and we have some explaining to do.
We were a little bit off, but we have our best correspondent here to talk about what's going on. Alex, welcome.
Oh, I thought I had to do a character.
I was hoping you would.
Here's the deal, everybody. This went really well, Casey.
I'm the worst NPR host. So much dead air.
The first half of this episode, Casey and I will be the first to admit that it was a bit much.
My hair was standing on end.
We were fueled by a ticking clock. We were disorganized. We were
disheveled.
Disheveled. We were tangent heavy. If we were water and tangents were hard minerals, we would be like gray water.
I think that's true. We would have probably found every crack and gone into it.
Yeah. I'm talking about tap water when it's like heavy. Oh. There's lots of minerals, like hard water.
You know? Oh, I was thinking like water running through a cliff.
See, here we have again, we're off sync tonight. So we wanted to come back in classic NPR style, a well-produced show for everybody involved. We had a meeting.
Yes, that was our ticking time bomb.
Yes, and suddenly Casey was in the middle of describing the morphology of acacia tortellinis.
That's it.
And I looked at the clock and we had exactly 1 minute to get into this meeting.
And we did it.
So I gave us a heart out and it was a lot. And we're here to apologize.
I'm sorry.
I'm sorry.
Moving on.
Here we go. Okay, Casey, let's continue our discussion of the morphology of the, I cannot remember the name of this tree.
I know.
The umbrella
That's
thorn.
It. The umbrella thorn. Oh, gosh. Okay. The umbrella thorn. It's a tree. Vachellia tortalis.
Yes. We're all back on the same page.
All right.
Let's continue. Last we were talking, I believe we were talking about peas.
We could easily go
back and listen.
Well, I'll give you a quick synopsis because I'm sure everyone also has had a meeting in between the break and now.
As you do.
So this is a tree. It used to be in the genus Acacia. Now it's in a different one.
Okay.
Vachellia. And it is in a pea family. Fabaceae. Again, the most fabulous family.
Super fab.
So these are alternately arranged leafed trees.
Okay.
And what that obviously means is you have a node. You have, instead of being an opposite, two branches coming out. You got, they're all.
I know alternate. What that means.
Yeah, you get it. I'm preaching to the choir over
Look
here.
Look at me.
I'm Conan to the forest.
Do you think I can tell people I know about trees?
I think so. Yeah. If someone says something to you, you can just like it. You don't have to be like, oh. You can just be like, heart. I get it.
I want eventually for you to give me some sort of certificate.
Yeah.
That says that I've graduated to like. Tree novice.
Oh,
you know,
I had not thought about
some sort of license.
I kind of feel like I need to create, it's like a certification program.
Yeah, but surprise me with it.
Yeah, I will. All right. Yeah, you okay? You got it. Deal.
Thank you.
Well, you haven't got there yet, kiddo. If you were here, I would have rustled your head.
Oh man, I would have fucking been so mad.
Sorry. All right, glad I didn't do it. All right, so alternately arranged leaves on this tree.
Okay.
It doesn't grow very tall, up to maybe about 50 feet. And why it's called the umbrella thorn is A, it has thorns, and B, it grows like an umbrella.
Does it ever.
You know, man, it's we were talking about that before the break, but I'm going to get to it in a second because I realized I should explain one thing first.
Okay.
I'm on the way.
What's that?
So, I just had them on the way.
Oh.
The stipules, that's what I was going to explain. Oh, that's okay.
Jesus.
You're fine. You're not even listening. You are. I'm just kidding with you. Get out of here.
I'm looking at pictures of umbrella thorn and putting the pieces together that it looks like an umbrella.
Yeah, there you go. It's because it grows out and it ends up growing wider than it grows tall.
Yes.
And then animals will browse on the bottom and eat all the leaves. There it is, browsing again.
Yeah,
right?
That's great.
So they'll browse it. And so the tree can't grow any lower because it's always getting eaten. So it ends up growing out.
Amazing.
And because there's so much water and or lack of water because it's a drier area, it doesn't grow very tall because the higher you get, the more water you have to use. The wider you go, the more you shade the ground underneath you and you don't have to deal with so much evaporation.
Hey, that's really fun.
Yeah, isn't it great? So what happens is it has these leaves and the leaves grow out and they are very kind of small leaves. But here's a fun one for you, Alex. It is the leaf is bipinnately compound.
Woo! Okay.
Uh-huh.
I can do this.
All right. What does that mean?
Bipinnately.
Correct. Compound.
Now, to me, that means that the leaflets on this compound leaf come out in pairs.
Not necessarily. But yes.
They're oppositely arranged? No,
no.
They're alternately arranged.
Uh-huh.
But they're binately compound?
No.
That's what you said.
No, I said bipinnately compound.
Bipinnately compound. Yeah. Well, clearly I don't know.
Well, I like you trying to figure it out. Here it is. That means
I'm upset with myself.
Don't be upset, Alex. You're fine.
I feel like I was right on the verge of understanding what that meant and it slipped away. Like you're trying to remember a dream that you just had.
Grasping at straws.
I'm like, oh, wait, I had it.
Yep.
No, it's gone.
Nope. In this case, what it means is that each pinnately compound leaflet is also broken into pinnately compound leaflets.
Wow. This is a meta tree.
Yeah, it's super meta. The leaves, at least, for certain.
Dude, the leaflets are leaflets. The leaflets are made of leaflets, man.
That's impossible. You're right. That's it, though.
I've seen it.
Yeah. So every time, so it has that that initial petiole comes out, and then it splits into little leaflets, and then each one of those leaflets are bump, 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 spin to individual leaflets on top of it.
We will absolutely be including a picture of this because it looks awesome.
So, and there's a couple trees that are like that. Not a lot, but especially the ones in the pea family and tropical trees, actually. A lot of them have these bipinnately compound or just pinnately compound leaves. So once you are looking closer at it, you see that, and then you're like, well, what is that? There are a bunch of thorns on the bottom of those leaves.
On the bottoms of the leaves.
Yes, right at the very base, there are these little thorns that pop out. they're modified stipules are what they're called.
Okay.
And basically what this means is that a stipule is a bit of a, it's a modified leaf part that grows right at the base of the petiole or kind of adjacent. Sometimes they're on the bottom of the petiole.
Yeah.
But it's like little bits of leaf blade or modified leaf stuff that's not quite up with the rest of the leaf where you would see it, like the leaf blade, you know?
Okay.
Willows do this. Roses have this. They have little petioles, like basically little wings on the bottom of their leaves.
Yeah.
A couple others. But in this case, it's called a spinescent stipule.
Oh, boy.
Isn't that great?
That's fun.
Yeah. Spinescent.
Spinescent stipule.
Yeah. I feel like that's something that you get in trouble with. Like, we caught you with the spinescent stipule.
in Harry Potter.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. No, it's not mine. It's Hermione's. She's like, yeah, it was mine. I'm not gonna make those.
What do you think a spinescent? I hate to take us. Well, I don't hate it, I guess. What do you think a spinescent stipule is?
Ooh, a spinescent stipule would be when someone says something like, I think it's a rule. Like, like if they do this, then they grow spines.
Oh, that's great, Case. Yeah. I was trying to think of it as like a toy that you shouldn't have, like a remember all.
Oh, I see.
But it's like,
you can have a certain kind of stipule, but not a spinescent one.
Kind of shifting rings, like,
oh, yeah, okay, yeah.
Kind of flowing in a figure eight pattern.
Oh, is that a spinescent stipule? Wow, that's beautiful. You're not supposed to have that.
I thought they stayed making those.
They did, and I got this from He Who Shall Not Be Named.
Whoa.
Sorry, that took a dark turn, didn't it? Anyway.
No dark artifacts allowed in this school.
Yeah, sorry.
You'd get banned from Hogwarts for that kind of talk.
Yeah, you'd get zinged with a zinger from a wand.
Yes.
I forgot. I didn't read the last of those books.
I think it's Zingus is the spell.
Yeah, you're probably right. Anyway, it basically just means that the stipules, those modified leaf parts, become really sharp and thorny.
Okay.
But technically they're spines because they're leaves. Don't worry about it.
I will not.
But what's fun about them is that they have these two little tiny ones, and they're right at the base, little in pairs, and they either have two little tiny ones that are curved, or they have a really long one that's sharp. And they can either have two of big ones, two little ones, or one big one, one little one.
Wow.
Yeah, it's really wacky.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, we'll have some photos, and if you look, if you go to our website and you go to the extra information, there'll be a great link to a website that has just a fantastic amount of information on this tree.
Love it.
And you go to it, you look at it, and whenever it gets bit, those thorns, the big thorns, will grow. So it's a little, everything's, you know, chilling out, got little thorns. But then any time that an animal goes and like takes a bite out of it, whing,
ooh, it's got a little Pinocchio syndrome.
Yeah, exactly. It grows out these things. Yeah, but the Pinocchio syndrome, yeah, it's the tree's not lying. Yeah, you tried.
It was
best.
A lateral move.
It was close. Yeah.
Thank you.
But yeah, so it looks really cool. It has these modified, these two different kinds of modified stipules that are really pokey. And they have these cool, yeah, we already talked about everything else. They're beautiful trees.
Flowers?
Oh my gosh. Cones? Oh, I can't believe I forgot that. No cones. We already got the fruit. The fruit's those little spiral.
Oh yes, the pea pods.
But the flowers, oh my God, they're so beautiful. The flowers are like these little balls of, like, just like little puff balls. Almost like, a little bit more textured cotton ball that smells really good, and it's kind of like a kind of creamy white color.
It's I'm seeing a lot of yellow ones.
I'm not sure if they're always yellow. Maybe they sometimes are yellow.
Okay, maybe it's a dead one.
There's also
like kind of graying.
Yeah, and there's a couple other ones that are different colored. So like there's another kind of acacia that is a different that is like super super yellow.
I see.
But that one's not quite the same one. You can tell because that one the spines are all the same size.
I also see one here, Casey. And I'm gonna make sure to save this photo so we can put it online.
Oh, yes,
on our Instagram. But it has kind of it looks like the yellow part of the flower sort of looks like a pineapple shape.
Uh huh.
And what would be the top kind of fronds of the pineapple?
Yeah,
it's like a big bushy pink fluff.
What? You got to show me these. I can't see the photo that you're looking at.
Yeah, we're across the room from each other, but. Well, it's way too much work to turn my monitor around.
Oh, I'm not. Yeah, there's a wall there.
It's very cool.
Ah, rad. You're like, listen, I'm not going to show you, but it's rad.
You don't know what you're missing, man.
I never do. Well, that's what they do. And that's the same thing. You were all those tree families or genus that you were reading. Genre.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
The Albizia is the silk tree or the mimosa. They also have really these just insanely puffy flowers.
Okay.
I think they're actually a bunch of stamens that actually come out. But they are just these like really big, gigantic puffballs that look very stringy, kind of like the hairs on one of those old trolls. You remember those little guys?
Absolutely, I do.
Yeah, it's just kind of like that, but more fine.
Well, I think that might be what I'm looking at. This, okay, like, yeah. This other acacia flower.
Well, so this is the thing, though. Their leaves and their flowers and their little twigs are delicious.
Oh, Casey, you have brought us to the centerpiece.
Yes.
A little podcast lingo that we've created. A little behind the scenes.
I term it the meat.
Wait, didn't I call it the meat?
No, you called it the meat. Hated the meat, but I insisted.
Hey, I didn't hate the meat.
Yeah, I guess that's true.
Casey, if these things are so delicious and they're so high up, I can only think of one animal that could really, truly appreciate.
Could really get into it.
The umbrella thorns, delicious foliage.
Is it?
And that is the giraffe.
Elephant. What?
Oh, what?
Oh, God.
Oh, shit. Okay.
I'm just kidding. You're right. The giraffes and like monkeys actually eat the pods. Monkeys and baboons will eat them.
Fantastic.
And elephants will browse on it as well. And some like kudu and like certain deer-like hoofed animals.
Oh, yeah.
They'll like stand up on their hind legs and snatch some of the lower leaves.
Cute.
It is. But you have to give it to them for their balance. Like, it's incredible. Like,
oh,
they're standing on, you know, basically little tiptoes.
Right.
Stunning.
I love all those kinds of like deer adjacent animals.
Oh, there's so many.
I know.
Just so many to even think of.
And so many of them look so alien. Alien.
Alien.
Tim Allen.
Yeah, that's Tim Allen.
They look alien.
Tim Allen, the alien. Yes, they do. And like some are even really small. There's one in South America that's like a foot and a half tall.
Oh, is it the pick?
Yeah, might be.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, we're not talking about these little tiny ones. We're talking about the big ones.
We're having a hard time today.
We are. We got to do another NPR intro. We can focus.
All right, we'll be right back. We're going to reset again.
Hi, Alex. Welcome back. I'm just kidding. We're still here.
We're talking about giraffes.
So, this is one of the quintessential examples of way back when. Actually, let's take a quick step back. Have you heard of evolution?
Listen. Yeah. I don't believe in that hocus pocus.
It's pretty hocusy and pocusy. You're right.
Hocusy.
But some people thought about this as an idea. They said, well, what about these fossils? Where did these come from?
Right. Are you talking Darwin?
Darwin, yes. But there's many other people who had this.
Yeah.
This question. In the late 1700s, early 1800s, fossils became like a thing. Like in the science communities of Britain and the Royal Society, they were really starting to find all these really cool rocks.
Interesting.
So we started looking at them saying, well, look at this. This kind of looks like the bones of this animal. Kind of looks like the bone of this animal. But it was just specifically different. And they started obviously building up these huge collections, and they started to realize maybe creation wasn't invented the way the Bible said.
Uh-oh.
I know. I always bring religion into it because it has such a huge thing on our culture. But this was a huge, huge deal way back when.
Oh, weren't people killed over this stuff?
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah. Darwin was like ostracized, like all these, you know, things. Science, way back when in like Greek times, and the folks, the Arabian Arab scientists. They were also extremely religious and spiritual people. Mm-hmm. But in these old cultures, 2,000 years ago, science and religion and spirituality, they were all put together, all the same thing.
Okay.
Not until like the last 300 years or so were those 400 years, did they start to split apart.
That's wild to me. Yeah. We've gotten so much done in such a short time.
No, it's man, that graph is insane.
Wow.
But yeah, so we started to really like consider this, and it was not a good idea. It's very taboo to consider that maybe all those animals did not get on the ark and then released them all back into the wild, and they repopulated the entire world. That's not quite how it worked.
Yeah.
Turns out. So people started coming up with ideas. They said, well, how do we go? It maybe what happened is that we had all these animals that existed, and then they just slowly over time changed. And everyone's like, that's crazy. Like that just doesn't make any possible sense. And so we had people start to come up with different theories as to how that could happen.
Okay.
The two big ones that came up were what is called Lamarckian evolution. Have you heard of this?
No, absolutely not.
Well, have you heard of Darwinian evolution?
Yeah.
So
yeah,
these were the two big names at the time.
Okay.
What is this guy's name? I forgot his name. It's Lamarck is his name, or is his last name. So everyone would just call him...
A Frenchman?
Yes, Jean-Baptiste Lamarck.
Wow, what a great name.
Thank you. I said it much better than I did the Marie one. I thought you were saying how good I was when I didn't say that.
You also did a good job pronouncing this cool name.
Yeah, thank you.
And congrats to Jean-Baptiste Lamarck.
Hey, man, he did some good stuff. So he gets kind of villainized, and it's specifically because of his description and his kind of first theory, which give him credit because he just, he came up with some idea. He's just spitballing.
Yeah.
And he saw these giraffes. And so he said, well, this, you must be able to, in order to pass on to your offspring a trait.
Uh-huh.
You would have to develop that trait, or you could develop that trait during your lifetime.
Okay.
So imagine I am a really good baker. I develop and I learn this new skill of baking, and I would pass that through my genes onto my brood.
Thank you.
And then they would then become great bakers.
Okay.
And that would become their evolutionary trait. That's kind of what he was thinking. So he would say that I see that these giraffes have to stretch. So if the biggest, tallest giraffe stretches its neck and it can get to these higher things, I forgot the term that he used. It was like nervous plasma or something like that. Like basically you get more, your nervous system creates this certain special like pixie dust.
Okay.
And then that becomes a trait of you that you can pass on to your next giraffe.
Wow.
So if I stretch my neck out and I have the biggest, tallest neck that I've been stretching, when I then have my children, they will inherit that new trait of stretchiness that I created during my lifetime.
I see.
So have a couple generations and you can get these really tall neck giraffes.
Is it like, is there a better chance of passing that trait on to your offspring if it's like really beneficial to you?
Well, that's the theory. At least, again, this is Lamarckian evolution.
Okay.
So he would say yes, and if you don't use it, you would lose it.
Been there, guy.
Exactly. So, we don't need our tails anymore, so I don't use my tail. So over a couple generations, my basically this fancy nervous system pixie dust just kind of gets rid of it, and you just change.
Okay.
So some people thought about that, then like, well, that doesn't sound quite right, because then theoretically that would happen much faster, you know?
Yeah.
And so what he wasn't quite appreciating was A, the boring nuances of science and genetics, and B, he wasn't appreciating the time that has to go into this. Enter this other guy, Charles Darwin, and his other friend, or I guess they weren't really friends, Alfred Russel Wallace.
Can we call him Chucky D?
Yeah, let's call him Chucky D.
Sick.
Chucky D and
what's the other
AFW.
Guy's name? AF Dubs.
Alfred, what did I just say? Russell.
Let's call him A-Dubs.
A-Dubs.
Chucky
right.
D and A-Dubs.
Chucky D and A-Dubs were just walking through the forest looking at a bunch of butterflies.
Well, your name is Casey and you're here to say...
Oh, you're the best rapper, my God. So...
Oh, you could rhyme that with Acacia.
Oh, yeah. Oh, God. We could.
We're here to talk about Acacia.
Acacia. I hate this. I'm the worst rapper. I can't even... whenever I try to rhyme more than one thing at a time, I'm always just like...
Yeah, rhyming is hard on the fly.
It's so hard. Everyone who can do it, I'm so impressed.
I benefit from being a songwriter that doesn't rely on improvisation.
Yeah, good for you. I benefit from just running anytime I have to write a song. Anyway, so Alfred Russel Wallace, A-Dub.
Thank you.
And Chucky D. They both came up with this idea kind of together but separately. And it was a huge, huge big deal way back when. I could tell you all about it. But basically, in science, there's like this idea of preeminence, or like getting saying something first. Not preeminence, but getting the, I forgot the term again because I've never done it.
I understand this though. I mean, it's sort of the way that modern like social media news outlets work. Like whoever publishes the story first, like they won.
Exactly. And everyone else has to reference them.
Yes.
Yes, this is exactly it.
Okay.
So who came up with the theory of evolution first? There's been people who've written literal books on this.
Wow.
But I actually read a book. It's called the Song of the Dodo, which talked all about this. It was a delightful book. Okay. I highly recommend it.
I try.
And so what it was is he came up with not the theory of evolution, like I said, that already had been there. He came up, or they came up with, the theory of evolution by natural selection. And this is a big thing that everyone like misunderstands a lot. You know, the term survival of the fittest.
Yeah.
It means not quite what people think it means, because it just means if you're more fit, then you and your offspring will survive. Probably more likely. Doesn't mean that you will, but more often than not.
Okay.
So if you were a population of things, a population of, let's say, giraffes, and all the giraffes were on average about the same size, then you, over time, if you just play out the averages over literally thousands of generations, and you have these acacia trees that start putting out, or not acacias, the vachellia trees, they start putting out all these thorns, then only the super tallest of the tall are going to actually eat the leaves, right?
Right.
It's not that they developed the height in order to do that. As one tree got taller, the giraffes got taller. It just happened to be, if I was like you, how tall are you?
I'm 6'2".
I am 5'9".
Okay.
If we could not go up on our tiptoes, and I was just trying to eat whatever is at my mouth level, if you had more things that were at your mouth level, another 4 inches worth of height, five inches, I guess, technically, then you get an extra 5 inches of stuff to eat. You're going to get a little bit bigger.
Sounds good to me.
Yeah. Maybe if we all have to run from a lion, you're going to be just a little bit faster. This is the big difference between Darwinian evolution and Lamarckian evolution, is that it's a gene that is developed, but you already had that gene. You have all your genes that you have right now. Those are the only things you can pass on to your brood.
Yes.
You cannot develop anything right now in terms of genes and pass that on.
Okay. So Lamarckian is more like you can, you know, it's like a video game. Like if you want to get good at using swords, you got to up your sword level.
Yeah.
And so you use swords a bunch and you level up in swords, and so you get better at using swords. Darwinian is like, you are set with your dice rolls at the beginning of this game and you cannot get any higher in those skills.
Yes. And now take that on a population level.
Okay.
Where if you, let's say again, in the sense of these giraffes, it would be that just over thousands of generations of these giraffes, the ones that ended up making just slightly more babies, or had just more babies that survived just a little bit more of the time, over a really long period of time, those are the ones that will end up being more successful, more fit. And then that is the survival of the fittest.
I think I got what you're, what you're putting down.
All right. Yeah. So that is the theory that everyone came up with. And so everyone makes fun of Lamarck because they're like, what an idiot. He can't do that. And it's like, whoa.
That's not fair.
He was like on the cutting edge of science at the time. If there's, it's like someone coming up with a theory about physics and like, how does this quark work. If you just come up with a theory and then like 100 years later, everyone's like, that's so completely wrong because of what we know now, then people are going to make fun of you for it. It's like, no, you no one had any idea.
You still worked hard on it.
You still worked really hard. Credit for you, you quark worker.
Yeah, I'm a Lamarck stan.
Yeah,
I think I'm more Lamarck than Darwin, honestly.
That's fair. You just keep standing on your tippy toes and we'll see what happens.
I like the underdog, Casey.
That's a good idea. So yeah, so that was the big thing that people came up with. And so for many years, this is what people have actually kind of talked about with this. This is what we had talked about and wanted to talk about with how these trees developed.
Yeah, let's
like,
do it.
Over time, the theory would go that as you had a the giraffes, like again, thousands of generations worth of giraffes, over time, they would slowly but surely, their population, the level and the size of their bodies and their necks of an entire population would over time switch and shift to being longer and longer and longer.
Right.
Then you have trees that at the same time, over thousands of generations, would slowly but surely develop just a little bit higher, a little bit higher, and you get this arms race between the tree and the giraffe, where the tree would constantly be doing that. But then, where does that end? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Does it end like, are we in the middle of it or what's going on? So people really are kind of thinking about that. And they're like, well, maybe they just struck a balance because the ecosystem would not allow these trees to get any taller for whatever reason. Maybe there's just not enough water.
Okay.
And it's like, okay, maybe that's possible, but giraffes have been around for a long time and these trees have been around for a long time. So how long does it take? Maybe we are just in the middle of this, you know, eons long transition where this arms race is going to end up having giraffes that get too tall. They can eat every single tree and all the trees die.
Right. And then the giraffes die because there's no more trees.
Theoretically, yeah. And then you get this cycle that starts over again after, you know, another 100 millions of years and you get this new tall animal, tall tree kind of thing. That's plausible. Maybe, maybe not. So these other people came in and they're like, well, what about this? And there's another fun thing that I wanted to talk about because this always comes up, and I should preface this, I am a tree person. I'm not a genetics person. Genetics are extremely complicated.
Yeah.
But
I'm more of the genetics person.
Yeah, I know. I should really...
You kind of come to me with your genetics questions.
I've been meaning to ask you to take over right now because I'm lost.
Well, it's funny. Right behind you, I have my master's in genetics on the wall.
Why didn't I never see that before?
Yeah, well...
God, it's just beautiful. It's because I'm not tall enough.
Damn it. Casey, that was good.
Thanks. So this last bit is so some people are like, well, actually, I don't think that's quite how it works. It hasn't been this arms race of the tree getting taller and the giraffes getting taller because they've been around for millions of years. So wouldn't they just keep on getting taller?
Somebody would have had to have won by
exactly.
now.
Exactly. That's yeah. their argument. So
or be like 50 feet tall.
Yeah, these massive giraffes. So wow. Other people say, you know, there's all these different, this is why I'm saying I'm not a genetics person because there's 1,000 million other things that come in.
Yeah.
So maybe the taller you get, the worse your knees are, which means you're going to break your knees more often and you're going to get eaten.
Tell me about it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. See, once you get to 6'2", your knees just,
I mean,
break off.
It's true.
No, whoops, sorry.
I have terrible knees.
Sorry.
I'm also incredibly out of shape. Continue.
Now, what are you talking about? So this next thing is sexual selection. So some people are like, actually, here's a ball out of left field, as they say in sports. You would actually have the development of the tall neck in a giraffe because of one of two reasons. A, the bigger, tougher giraffe, the way that they fight, it's called necking.
Yes.
You've heard of this? You've seen
well,
it?
Well, no, but I already know what you're talking about.
Yeah, it's not the necking that we would usually refer to,
no.
You know, where you go out and you find your hawthorn boughs and you go out into the woods.
You get your sweetheart and you do some necking.
Yeah, exactly. This is when you find the other suitor that's trying to find your sweetheart and you bash your neck against theirs until they give up.
Hell yeah.
Ugh.
That's some Animal Kingdom shit.
It's damn straight it is.
Casey, if we ever do a live show of Completely Arbitrary, can we end with you and I giraffe necking?
Yes, we can. That sounds good. I'm going to grow out my little horns just so I can have a little like little evolutionary leg up on you.
Well, I'm going to get started on my long neck now with my evolutionary pixie
dust. I'm
going to
do it, yeah, because you're going to use the Lamarckian theory.
That's right. I'm going to
Oh my God, your neck's growing right now.
I'm going to sleep every night in my neck stretcher.
That's a good idea. So this last bit, this last little throw in is called sexual selection.
That's great.
Where it could be that, where the two males are fighting, and so they've grown these long necks so they can bash them into each other.
Yeah.
Or the lady giraffes are just like, I dig a long neck.
That long neck looking good.
I want that long neck. And then you take other animals, like the the peacock or the birds of paradise, where they develop these crazy amounts of, like, they spend so much time and energy and literal gene space to develop these wild displays and these techniques to get the lady birds. And they just go wild. But then sometimes, like a peacock, for example, it doesn't actually help them. It's a hindrance to them because now they have this gigantic appendage of feathers that does nothing but attract mates. But it also, like, makes you heavier. You're not quite as quick, maybe. You have you can't fly through things as swiftly. So you get these other, like, drawbacks. So if it's strictly evolution in the sense of the fittest, then nothing would develop anything that's fancy.
That's fascinating.
Yeah, we see this all over the place.
Dating is hard.
Dating is hard. And so you have sexual selection that comes in. So the question is, the best giraffe is not only the one that can reach the tallest of the leaves on the tallest of a Vercellia tortellus, but they also have to be tough enough to bash all the other necks that come near anything that they're looking for. They gotta look good while they're doing it.
Yeah.
All these things come
into birds,
play.
Two birds, man. Why not all of them?
No, two giraffes.
All right.
Yeah, we're talking about birds. Okay.
I say it's a little of everything, right?
It is, yeah. So in terms of evolution, and, you know, let's draw this back to the trees, of course, is there is this arms race that's going on, but it's always difficult unless it is super clear where, like, one bird is dependent on the seeds of this one tree, or like fig trees and fig wasps, where the fig wasps are literally 100% evolved to live in one specific kind of fig tree.
Yeah.
Then one goes extinct, the other by definition is going to go extinct because they can't survive off anything else. Meanwhile, with this arms race, you can have these trees that are developing these things, but then you would have all these other things that come into play with the giraffe. So maybe the tree is only getting taller and growing thorns only in response to how the lady giraffes think a male giraffe looks. So it's like you see these, like, evolutionary strings that are kind of connected. Yeah. And it's like, wait a second, is that true? It's like, well, maybe.
It sounds like, you know, like in a movie when, like, an investigator has, like, a cork board and there's like a bunch of strings attached
exactly
to pictures. This is Lamarck sitting in his parlor, rubbing his head,
smoking a pipe. Yeah. He and Watson were very close. Not Holmes.
Oh,
just Watson.
Right.
Watson was. I think he's a character that needs more credit. What was he doing when he wasn't solving crimes? He was actually over here trying to, you know, solve evolution.
Yeah, I think he was probably probably a good swimmer.
I bet you that's probably true. Yeah, I bet you he swam that channel more than once.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. But anyway,
well, Casey, stop. Yeah,
that's it. I just think it's so fascinating.
It's incredible. That's what a complicated web.
Yeah, and I have to always, like, I really like thinking about the evolution, or specifically survival of the fittest and natural selection.
Yeah,
because I hate, like, when I was growing up, like, people would always give it, they would just pass it off out of hand because they're like, the survival of the fittest, like, you know, the biggest, toughest survives. And it's like, that is just not true.
Right.
Half the time, a frog that is just smarter is going to basically find the women frogs as they're climbing up and jump on them. And the lady frogs are like, well, I'm just going to keep going. But you have the smarter frog that ends up mating with the female, or a cuttlefish that happens to be super, super clever, and it, like, rolls itself in and acts a certain way and gets to mate with this other female, while the big one, who's like, raw, I'm really tough, just is so dumb that it can't even figure out that there's this other little cuttlefish that's coming in.
I think what we're encountering here is a matter of vocabulary and semantics.
It totally is.
Fitness can be mental fitness.
Aha.
Emotional fitness.
Yeah.
And also physical fitness, you know, but
exactly.
It takes a village.
It takes a village. And the evolution between plants and animals and, like, what we're doing right now, the last kind of, like, piece to add on to this puzzle is that evolution never stops.
Yeah.
It's going on right now.
Right this second.
Exactly.
Things are evolving.
Things are evolving, but that's the thing. It's on such a scale to where I'm looking at this plant right in front of me. I'm looking at you. Those things are not evolving because a thing does not evolve. A population of things evolves.
Oh, interesting.
And so that is what drives it. It's the population dynamics and the population fitness that ends up moving that population to a different form over thousands of generations.
Wow, Case. That is my biggest takeaway from that was fascinating.
Excellent. And then you look at it. Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, I was just going to transition.
Yeah. So you look at it with trees, and that's been going on for literally millions and millions and millions more years than it has with half the animals that exist right now.
Right.
Because they move and they actually have a much quicker timeline.
Okay.
In terms of how they evolve. Any given tree is going to live for 80 years or more, and they have to take a lot longer for these population effects to really put the pressure and change it.
I see.
So when you have the evolution of animals, the evolution of trees, who knows what's leading to what?
Yeah.
But they have this insane amount of connection that when you really start to pick it apart and think about it, it's like you're saying, that draw board with all these strings and these photos mm-hmm. and these little push pins, it expands out to things you could not even imagine.
Just infinite.
Infinite. It's crazy.
Wow. Casey, clap. Go ahead and...
I'm sweating.
You want some water?
Yeah, I'm going to drink some water. I'm not going to drink this kombucha. It's like a poison.
I think this is a fantastic time to transition to our rating of the Umbrella Thorn.
All right.
And I say we also give a second rating to giraffes. I think they've earned it.
I think that's fair. I'm going to give them a Lamarckian rating where the better the giraffe in its lifetime, the higher the rating's going to get.
Now we're talking.
Yeah.
Casey is a resident expert. We doth begin with you.
All right, Alex. You got a really good name for that. All right, Alex.
Oh, you know, thanks.
Like Trebek or something.
Yeah, I don't love my name.
You don't?
No. Nah.
I'll call you something else.
No. Maybe I do like it.
Well, Casey, moving too fast here.
When you said that,
let's evolve slowly.
When you said that, I was like, wait, no, I don't want that.
Good. Okay, so here's my review of this tree. I think these are just some of the most fascinating trees because they have evolved the ability to react in like a certain time frame. So it's mostly tropical where they grow, but they do have wet and dry seasons. So there's a seasonality with how they grow. Mm. But the thing about them is that I love a tree that can fight back.
Hell yeah.
That's something that is just so fascinating to me.
That's great.
And another thing is that sometimes ants will live with them and like fight with them. We're going to cover that another time.
It's like the opposite of a lodgepole pine that just lets itself be devoured by bark beetles.
Yeah.
It's just like, well, this is my life now.
These are my cones. Good luck. Yeah. The acacia's just like, bite me again. Yeah. I don't think so.
Bite you back.
Yeah. Or the vachellia. I just think it's so cool. You bite into it and a giraffe eats a section, and they're like, oh, that was a really good section. They come back next year, and that section is like like thorned off, and like the leaves are just small enough to where you have to bite an entire bit of thorn through. I just think that's the raddest thing.
I wonder if that's also maybe why giraffes have such tremendously long tongues.
That is. That's the theory, over time. I would assume that is strictly so that they could get in between,
right,
like a little snake, plop it off.
And then just whoop,
yeah, exactly. Zip out. Exactly. So I'm gonna give this acacia thorn a 7.8.
Great.
Yeah, exactly.
That's fantastic.
I tried to rhyme again, 7.8. Great. I should have been like, yeah, mate.
You got it, mate.
Dang it.
Casey, what about giraffes? What do you give giraffes?
I'm going to give giraffes of the animal.
Did you pluralize giraffes with a V?
Oh,
I like
did
that.
I giraffes?
No, like knife. Let's do it.
Giraffes.
Giraffes.
I'm going to give a giraffe a 7.
Now you singularized.
Dang it. I can't keep track of this.
Try again. Slow down and try again.
Right. Hello, Alex.
This NPR it up.
Case. Yeah, I'm going to NPR real fast. Hi there. Welcome back to KEXZ Radio.
KEXZ.
I just made something up.
Oh, K-A-S-E.
K-C-A.
More like K-A-S-E.
That's exactly what it is. Uh-huh. All right.
This episode is chaos.
Giraffes. It's already plural.
What does it get?
I like giraffes 7.6.
Okay, great.
I think that they're really cool the way they neck.
Just out of reach of that.
Just out of reach of the acacia or the vachella.
7.8 golden cones of honor for the Umbrella Thorn.
That's
from
right.
Casey Clapp.
That's right, because it's a tree that fights back.
Put it in the books. Casey, I'm going to make my review very quick because this episode is just madness.
Beautiful.
And we are wrapping up our review at 1 hour, 7 minutes, which I think is, from a producer standpoint, just unacceptable.
Yeah, thanks for sticking with us.
I'm going to give the umbrella... I like a few things about the Umbrella Thorn. I also like that it fights back. I think that's fantastic. I did not know that it was a part of the pea family. That's charming.
Fabulous.
Yeah, it's a fabulous pea tree. I also like just its sort of silhouette is so iconic.
Yeah.
And it's such a beautiful, like, majestic tree. It's like
that scene with the sunrise coming up.
Yes. And it's just like reaching its arms out and soaking in the sun. It's so beautiful.
Yeah.
I really love how, you know, it can't grow that tall. So it is just like, fuck it, I'll grow out.
Yeah.
It's what I can do, you know.
And it does a great.
It does a great job. It looks like an umbrella. I like that it switched families.
Yeah.
Genre.
Genre. Yeah.
I give the Umbrella Thorn 7.4.
Nice.
Yeah.
It's pretty good.
Right down the middle of the upper register of the cone scale.
I think that makes a lot of good sense.
Cone scale.
Yeah, it's a cone scale.
Giraffes, I'll give giraffes an 8.
An 8?
An 8.0. You know who They're hates giraffes?
Enough. Who?
In a really funny, weird way, is Dan Harmon, the creator of Community.
Really?
And Rick and Morty.
Why would anyone hate it?
He goes
why?
On a... I YouTube it. He goes on great, big, long rants about giraffes.
About giraffes.
Yeah.
Just is like, I hate giraffes.
And basically, he hates what we just talked about, the evolution of the giraffe's neck.
You know what? I bet you he's a Lamarckian.
I bet you he's a Lamarckian. That's why I connect so much with him.
Yeah. We gotta talk. We gotta reach out to him and like let him down gently.
Yeah, let's reach out to Dan Harmon.
Yeah, Dan, we got news for you. It's not what you think. And if it is what you think, we're sad you think that.
Yeah, sorry, Dan.
Anyway.
But also, it would be a pleasure to talk to you.
do reach out to us, though.
He'll definitely hear this, right?
Oh, yeah. I think everyone listens to this.
I think he's a fungal associate.
Yeah, probably.
Casey, let's move on to our completely arbitrary Q&A. This week, our question is from listener E.G. Smith. Let me just say to E.G. Smith, if you are not a novelist yet, you probably need to get on that.
Yeah, that's
because you have the perfect novelist name.
Most definitely. The newest novel by E.G. Smith.
100%. Classic literature, E.G. Smith.
If you do get us, we'll give you an NPR critics review of it.
Yeah, let's do it.
Yeah.
E.G. Smith asks, hello. I'm a big fan of the podcast. Hey, thanks.
EG, we're a fan of you.
That's right, EG. I had a question that only occurred to me this season as you talk about trees from around the world. Oftentimes, you talk about seeing trees being planted in Portland or the greater U.S. in general.
Yes.
That came from different parts of the globe. Where, I believe EG is referring to maybe the monkey puzzle most recently.
Ah, yes. Our Japanese cherry.
Yes, also the Japanese cherry. Well, this whole season, they even said that. Are invasive species a big concern when it comes to trees?
Mm.
Have there been cases where an introduced species outcompeted with native trees in a blatantly harmful way?
Ugh.
Do they grow so slowly that it's harder to tell when compared to quickly breeding animal populations? That's an interesting question.
Wait, say that question again.
Do they grow so slowly that it's harder to tell when compared to quickly breeding animal populations? Upon rereading, I actually don't know what that means.
I'm not sure, but I'm going to give a stab at it anyway because I like doing it.
Thanks so much, and looking forward to hearing about more trees from around the world. E.G. Smith, she, they. Casey.
E.G.
Let's talk invasion.
All right. So tree invasion.
Yeah.
The answer is yes, that has happened. It happens often.
Okay.
The quintessential example, for better or worse, in at least in the United States, is the Tree of Heaven.
I
think we've talked about it once or twice.
Us in the forestry industries refer to it as, I'm sorry, the Tree of Hell.
Yeah, that's the standard joke. Everyone
I said that to Kit. We were going to do a Tree of Heaven episode, and I said, I've got a great title for it. What about Tree of Hell? And he rolled his eyes in the same way that I roll my eyes at Casey when we talk about making a video and he wants to start with, oh, hey, didn't see you there.
Yeah, it's the best way to do it.
Every industry has its overplayed cliches.
No one's ever had that. No one's ever made a video like that before, Alex. Anyway.
Sorry, I roasted you.
Ouch. It's all right. I have an umbrella above me. And it's thorny.
Mm.
So, all right, here's the answer. Yes, 100%. So for those of you who may not be aware, we should first talk about this idea of invasive species. An invasive species is a species of plant or animal that is not native to that region, but has escaped and naturalized into the environment. Most of the time, it would be in an environment that is a natural area of some kind.
Okay.
So if you have a species of tree that is from China, someone brought it over and planted it in England, and now in England, it grows itself and repropagates itself.
Oh.
People do not have anything to do with it. If it puts out seeds, those seeds will grow, and those trees will then grow up, and that or those plants or those little babies, because it's going to be any living thing, really, yeah. And they will cause trouble, whatever trouble it is.
Okay, so part of being invasive includes out-competing other trees who live there natively.
Exactly, correct. So the Tree of Heaven, again, quintessential example. It is just one of the best trees in the world. It's a super competitive tree. It can do anything. It's native to China, and it will grow almost anywhere. I've seen it growing in the like highest latitudes, not maybe like super duper high, but like high latitudes up in Canada. I've seen it down in southern California, and it's growing just as well in each one of these places.
Interesting.
So what happens is an invasive species can just naturalize itself and grow, but the difference that really makes it kind of gives it a leg up is that it does not have any natural predators or natural other forces and pressures that keep it down.
Because it's not at home.
Exactly. And it is now, for whatever was happening at home, maybe it was soil, water, another insect, another kind of tree, something, it would be in balance more or less. And you bring it outside and it just proliferates for whatever reason.
This reminds me of, I'm not a comic book person, but it reminds me of Superman, right? Superman came to Earth.
Uh-huh.
We have a different atmosphere.
Yeah.
So he can fly.
Yes.
And he becomes Superman only when he comes to Earth because he is an invasive species.
In that regard. Or at least he's an exotic species, because I should also give the other side of that.
Okay.
An exotic species is one that's just not from that wherever you're at.
I see.
In Portland, literally anything that doesn't grow native. And I say native because there's a lot of people who are like, well, what is native? That's a whole other conversation.
Okay.
Let's Douglas fir. It grows here. It's a native tree to Oregon, the western side especially.
Mm-hmm.
If you plant that over on the East Coast, it would be an exotic species.
Not invasive.
Not invasive, because it does not naturalize and grow and outcompete other things over there.
Gotcha.
For whatever reason. So there are trees that do that. Over here in Portland, Tree of Heaven, like I said, anywhere in North America, Tree of Heaven.
Yeah.
But then you also have different kinds of cherry trees that are invasive around here.
Hmm.
There is the Norway maple is slightly invasive. The holly is actually pretty rough around here.
Yeah.
English ivy. It's not a tree, it's a vine, but man, it's a problem.
Man. I love that aesthetically, though, looking at a tree covered in ivy.
Oh, yeah. If you go to the Southwest, this is the best example, actually, the Bradford pear. Yeah, they planted that down in, like, say, Missouri, and they're like, yeah, it's a beautiful thing. And then one of them decided it was going to make seeds, made some seeds, pop. Now it is just this super awful invasive down in the sort of lowland forests in Missouri and sort of that central Midwestern kind of south area.
We will talk about the Bradford pear.
Oh, yes, we will. So that one is invasive there. English holly over here. Kudzu is a super big problem if you're in the eastern forest, like in the Appalachia. Go to like Cherokee, North Carolina, and every tree is covered with this massive, huge vine called kudzu.
Oh, wow.
Oh, God, it's terrifying. It just, it looks awful.
Like, it looks like it's just like a spider webs.
Exactly,
but
yeah.
Yeah.
So, down if you go to California, the eucalyptus tree is super invasive in certain places down there. If you go down to the southern kind of coastal side of California. And so the issue with this is that you have nothing that's stopping it. And because you have nothing that's stopping this tree from growing, it can just grow and grow and grow. But a lot of times, because the ecosystem is not attuned to how that tree grows, and I mean the ecosystem in its grandest sense, it is growing almost unchecked. But the ecosystem, it is growing unchecked because the ecosystem doesn't know what to do with it. It's not prepared for it. And the ecosystem cannot learn to check it until you have thousands of generations of something that says, well, I guess I'm going to learn to eat this tree. And if you take the Eucalyptus, for example, they have very specific, it's actually why it's used in so many different things. They're like antifungal and anti-insectic, insecticidal, anti-insect.
That's why you find it in like soaps and shower cleaners.
Yeah, it also, I mean, it smells good.
Smells fantastic.
That smell, though, is what helps stop it from, or that chemical is help what stops things from eating it.
Interesting.
Especially down in its native area in a lot of cases. So when you bring it up here, it's just unpalatable. So no insect native to California is like, yeah, I'm going to go eat that. It's like, no, I'm going to go eat literally anything else, and it's going to be great.
So it just grows out of control?
Grows out of control. Because it grows out of control, it can outcompete other trees and other things. When it outcompetes all these other things and nothing wants to eat it, what happens to all the all those native things that normally would eat the native thing that's there? They end up perishing as well.
I see.
So you get these kind of dead zone forests where there's another southern tree or another shrub. It's a kind of huckleberry, or not huckleberry. It's a smelly thing. What is it? I said huckleberry, and now my brain is just huckleberry. Oh gosh, I'll get there. It's a little shrub, honeysuckle.
Honeysuckle.
Yes,
that's pretty close to
Tapifoliaceae.
To huckle yeah. shower. What is it? Huckleberry.
Yeah, Jesus. Don't get me back on it. So it's just this shrub that grows down in outside Columbia, Missouri, just as an example, and it grows and takes over the entire understory. There are no other shrubs that grow there. It outcompetes everything. And because it does that, it ends up taking away the light for things that would grow underneath it, and it takes away the secondary layer for other things that would want to grow up and take that kind of shrub layer section.
I see.
Because it does that, you get almost no birds that are there because they don't eat that fruit. They can't make their nests in that area. So the birds slowly but surely leave as this invasive species spreads out. So same thing happens with anything else, where if you have an invasive species that can run wild, it runs wild, outcompetes and pushes out your native flora, which then ends up inevitably pushing out the native fauna, which are the animals. And then you just get this repeating cycle because nothing can check it, and you end up getting it happening in, you know, positive feedback, you know, in a negative way.
Fascinating.
Yeah. So they're super bad. They're not in exotic species. It's great. You can plant a monkey puzzle.
I was going to say monkey puzzle in Portland is an exotic species.
Totally. You can plant it, but it's not going to grow and outcompete things.
For sure.
But a holly tree, you don't want to plant English holly around here because if it has those little berries, they're going to go out because birds do like to eat them.
Yeah.
And then they outcompete everything. English laurel is another example. Almost anything from England is invasive here, but also vice versa. Oh. There's an invasive like rhododendron that was planted there. If you ever go out to the beach on the coast of Oregon here, have you ever seen that beautiful grass that's growing?
Yes.
That is 100% invasive. It was not here 200 years ago.
No kidding.
No kidding.
It's so beautiful.
It is. It looks so like quintessential, but it's quintessential for different parts of the world where we like see that aesthetic. Mm-hmm. Here, we used to just have dunes that went straight into the forest or straight into the ocean.
Wow.
And now those dunes have all these grasses, but because those grasses are coming, now they're solidifying the soil or the sand. Starting to drop a certain thing. Now you get certain shrubs that move in. When the shrubs move in, they then create a layer of soil on top of the sand. Then trees move in. And now you have what would be considered, what some have considered, I'm still dubious about it, an invasive native population that now has come and outcompeted the grass, which was the initial invader, and now it's taken away the dune habitat only because it has now, the habitat has changed. Does this make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's crazy. And it's kind of like, well, is that good? Is that bad? It's a native process.
Yeah.
But it's based off of an invasive species. I don't know how to think about it.
I don't either.
Yeah. It's very complicated.
I do know that I like those grasses though.
Yeah. Right. Suffice it to say, yes, there are invasive trees that come around. They are just like any other organism where you can have an invasive or an invasion, so to speak.
Casey, that was a brilliant answer.
I try my best.
A brilliant question by E.G. Smith. Thank you.
Yeah. Oh, wait, quick. What was that other section? I know we should go, but what is that? What was this? What was the second bit?
Oh, do they grow so slowly that it's harder to tell when compared to quickly breeding animal populations?
Yes. No, it's almost exactly the same. An invasive species trait, lots of seeds, and they are prolific seeders, and all those things will grow.
Cool.
Yes. So, no, you can tell. It's almost exactly the same. An invasive species has the same characteristics if it's a plant, if it's an animal, if it's a tree, if it's a shrub.
Lovely.
There you go.
Casey, we've come to the end of this insane episode.
Man, I feel good. I feel like it was direct.
I feel like I'm dreaming. Before we sign off here, I do want to say something.
Oh, yes.
And I've been nervous to say it.
Oh, gosh. Do you want me to?
No. I'll do it. As probably a few people who follow us on Instagram know, my beloved dog Solo passed away yesterday.
Yes.
It was peaceful. You know, everything went as it should have. Obviously, heart-wrenching and awful. But I am alive, and everybody has been so fucking thoughtful and kind and supportive. Thank you so much.
It's amazing how a community can build over something like this. And we really, we appreciate the support here.
Yeah.
And we appreciate Solo. We appreciate you, Alex.
Thanks.
Well, thank you.
There's like a million other things I want to say, but I also don't want to like full on cry on mic.
Yeah, that's fair, but we'd allow it.
But basically, I feel very appreciative. It was a long road.
Yeah, it was a long time.
6 months of trying to make him better.
Mm.
And, you know, time and age caught up. And but he was he will live on. This is incredibly cliche, but it's what I can think of. He will live on in my heart forever. R.I.P. Solo.
I think that's exactly true.
Casey.
Alex.
Thanks for being here, bud.
Always. Thanks for being here with us.
And let's just dedicate this episode to Solo.
I think it's fair.
Thank you.
I would like to do that.
And I'd also like to dedicate every other episode to Solo.
That sounds good to me.
Can we do that?
Well, he was the producer. I mean, he's true. Without him, it's a silent majority back there.
It's true. Love that boy.
Yeah, we do.
Thank you, everybody, for listening. Sorry to end on such a downer.
We'll be back next week.
That's right, with more trees from around the world in our completely arbitrary world tour.
It's going to be in the Northern Hemisphere, I think.
We think.
But I don't know.
You know, the trolls also have a world tour.
What? Alex, we got to go.
I have nieces. Okay, thanks, everybody. Thanks for listening, Nisa. See you next time. Bye.
Bye.
Completely Arbitrary is produced by Alex Croson and Casey Clapp. Our production consultant is Olivia Frankie. Our artwork is by Jillian Barthold, and our music is by The Mini Vandals. Thanks for listening.